everybody. Let's go ahead and see who's got something to say.
It is Susan. It's area code 610. You're on the air.
Hi, guys. Good, Jeannie. You're keeping going. This book is going to be an expanding thing. You're not published. Michael doesn't stop. Why should you stop?
Oh, that's true.
You're discovering you're discovering more and more things. I've been thinking so much about, well, Dr. Tim's whole hour. I wanted to come on his hour and ask a question, but it was just so good that I didn't want to stop his. He was on a roll. I've been thinking, I try to hitch in my question and make sense of it. I've been very, very present to my son's struggle. He has left his medical practice, as I've said, and probably not going back. If he does go back, I think unless he gives himself a lot of time and does some of the work that you and Dr. Tim are talking about, not just wake-up sheets, but waiting to feel and live into his life's purpose. I think he's very close, but it's very unhealthy because something isn't right about it right now. And all the factors that you talk about, wind and stuff, well, he's been knocked sideways with the fact that even though he's great at being a surgeon, the stress of it and some of his motivations for being a good doctor are not healthy ones. So he has taken this time off, but even today he said, I might go back next Monday. And I said, wait a minute, are you just going to go through this again? Because he has left medicine 3 or 4 times, taken leaves of absence, felt terrible about it, felt guilty toward his partners. I know I've told you some of this before. The challenge is to be silent, Jeannie. That's what Dr. Tim was talking about. I'm even confused now. Who talks about what? Taking time to be silent and let nothingness be there and not know what you should be doing or what your purpose is. You talk about your purpose, and I love the initial purpose that we all have, to be kind and to be conscious, active, present, loving human beings. I love that that's a purpose and a worthy one, and that purpose alone should be enough for us. But as Jeannie said, we get blown around and we have difficulty being silent enough, or we have so many cultural pressures upon us to do things, earn money and be impressive, be famous, be very good at something. All of those things could be great, but if they're not, we're not well. So I wanted to ask you, Michael, if you could talk about the secondary purpose, the personal purpose, and how we find that. I know you've done this before. You've probably got 10 videos on it at least. But it's a very present issue. As I can wait with my son, because I can't advise him except to allow himself to take the time and to even feel the discomfort. He's on the edge of not wanting to be on the planet at all, and I've asked him, you know, are you going to do something drastic? He's that depressed. And being depressed, he's immobilized. A lot of the things he would do just to be a regular functioning person are not happening. A lot of time in bed in a dark room, you know, and how much can mother do? Go up in the room and say, you know, got to get out. Come for a walk with me. Let's take the new little dog. We have a new little dog. He does it reluctantly. It's way too much. He can't wait to get back and be quiet again. Now I have to deal with anybody. Anyway, I'm going on in 20 different directions. But what he needs is his secondary purpose. and it's just not there.
Right. So is he consciously working on purpose? I mean, is he aware that that's the issue that's going on for him?
Not in so many words. He's got a lot of garbage in there about how I should be earning money for the family. He has already saved enough that they could live on for the rest of their lives if he retired now at age 51. They don't live in a fancy way. And he's been a doctor all this time, and he's invested in these software money. He has this idol of money, number one. And then what will people think of me, number two? Terrible idol of people's opinions about him and what they will be if he is a nothing, which means he isn't an effective, successful doctor, is how it looks for him.
Right.
So, anyway, that's part of the answer of your question.
Well, the reason I was asking if he's aware that that's an issue for him, and if that's something he's working on, I was going to share that I'd, you know, send him a copy of the Purpose, Personal Power, and Commitment. And, you know, there's an exercise there where we walk people through. You know, I propose that the primary purpose is the same for all of us, and that the secondary purpose is unique and individual. And the way to establish it is to look at what are your skills and what do you enjoy doing. You know, if I remember one fellow who was in an intensive years ago, and his mother wanted him to be a doctor, and what he wanted to do was drive a truck. And his mother just insisted that he go to medical school, which he did. And he got his degree, you know, he walked across the stage and got his degree and went down to the audience and gave it to his mother and said, there you go, mother, and now I'm going to get a job driving a truck. And that's what he did.
Wow.
That was, you know, I mean, he had a sense of what he was here to do. And, you know, it sounds like there might be a possibility with your son that he's fulfilling this vision that the world has for them. You know, one of the ways I talk about it in that purpose workshop is that the world has something it wants from us. And basically, you know, if you look at what they call education, which really isn't education, it's more indoctrination. Education comes from the root educare, means to draw out. Indoctrination means to put in, and most of education is about putting in, and it's so that people become good commercial servants. And you know, if he looks at, and that's what the exercise is about, is to look at what do you enjoy doing? You know, make a list of 10 things you enjoy doing. And maybe he's good at surgery, but if that's not what he enjoys, then, you know, that's for his own, for the sake of his own energy field, it's a selling out. One of the things I realized a while back with Aria, and this for me kind of fits, was that it wasn't my job to direct her into what she would do with her life. My job was to see her as who she was and support her in developing her own unique energy system and energy style that would create the way it was presented to me intuitively back then when I was working with her was that she would create her own container in the world, energetic container that would carry her for what she wanted to do. But if, you know, somebody gets caught in the drift of, well, you're supposed to do this and you're supposed to do that, who it is, you know, is who the being is left behind. You know, if someone's purpose is, gee, what I really want to be doing is studying astronomy, but, you know, it's hard to make a living doing astronomy, so you go become a lawyer. It can leave people with a lot of challenges. So, you know, perhaps that taking that worksheet and looking at it, and I don't know if you could invite him or walk him through it, or, you know, even write him, you know, what are, even maybe just by asking the questions that go along with this, like, son, what really lights your fire? What do you just like? And see what his response is. And, you know, it might be that what he really wants to do is be a farmer. I don't know. But if my energy field is about creating and growing out of the earth, and I'm off doing something else, then there's going to be the kind of shutdown of the energy field.
Yeah.
But I think our purpose, if we, you know, as I presented in that workshop, is here's an exercise that helps to bypass the brainwash of the culture, because it we've been told since we were kids, this is what it is, then there isn't much room for the true being to create their own container, their own, you know, here's what I'm really about. And so built into, for me, and where that exercise comes from, is built into what I enjoy doing and what I'm good at. If I look at those two things, what am I just naturally, am I really good at? Mm-hmm. And then what do I enjoy? And then correlate that into a statement. You know, there's a vision statement of what in your heart of hearts do you know a perfect world looks like? And for most people, they go back to a remembrance when they were really quite small, and they knew how the world was supposed to work, and then the world came along and showed them, well, that's not how it works at all, with the brainwash of the culture. So having that vision, going back to the deepest parts of himself, into how do you know what should really be going on? And like for me, when I was doing the purpose exercise, when I was tapping into that and developing that, what came up for me is I remembered when I was a kid, my father didn't have a car. And he went out and got a car, maybe I was 5 or 6. And I can remember one day that we were out driving and there was somebody broken down on the side of the road. And my father kept driving. And I can remember this was where, for me, the purpose of what the real game was supposed to be on Earth. I just could not understand how we could drive past somebody and leave them on the side of the road. It was just like, how can we do that? Mm-hmm. And to me, that for me set my vision of what the world's supposed to look like. And then the second step in is a list of my skills. What am I capable of? Oh, gee, I'm good at synthesizing information. I'm good at presenting information. Okay. And so then what do I enjoy doing? I'd love getting up in front of that. I'd love to do that. And so correlating the vision with the skills and what I enjoy doing, there might be some skills that I've got, but I mean, I got great at it. Gee, I had a great-great-grandfather that had this perfected, and that's in me, but I can't stand doing it. Well, then that's not in alignment with my, energetically, it's not in alignment with my purpose, even though I have that skill. Right. So that's why those three components are there. What's your vision? What, in your heart of hearts, usually it goes back to early, early times. Do you remember knowing what the world was about? That would be the vision part of it. And then what are your skills? And what do you enjoy doing? Now, how do you correlate that into an expression, a statement of purpose? And you know, perhaps you can offer him that in some form, and or, you know, I'll send you a link to the MP3 of it. Or the video, and maybe he'll watch it. Maybe it'll be something to draw him out to look at.
I'd love to have him watch it.
Yeah,
you know,
space that you're guided.
I think the purpose my son has had for years is to prove that he's not stupid. And he picked...
Yeah, of course, that's not purpose.
I know.
Yeah, and that's going the opposite direction.
It was such an early message. I've told this before, but in his school, at age 3rd grade, they separate the kids into talented and gifted, and then the others. He didn't make it into talented and gifted. Being ambidextrous, dyslexic, they didn't think he was smart enough, but his best friends were all in that group. That hurt him, and he's still trying to prove that he's not stupid. And I think it's just so huge. So you're talking about discovering what is sweet to you and noticing your dad pass that guy by. That wasn't a direct assault on you and yourself. You found that to be wrong and not what we should be doing. And that's great that you had a way of following your wish to serve and help and could do that, I think we're dealing with some very early roadblocks here. Jonathan has dreamed of going to Alaska and living in a little hut out in the middle of nowhere where he could fish and hunt and build fires to keep himself warm and be quiet. He's a solitary, and he never did that, but what is something that's come closer to it is he got a kind of a beat up sailboat and he's been fixing it up, and it's 2.5 hours drive from here. And when I know that he's heading for the boat to do some more repairs on the boat, he's okay for the time being. And he loves doing that. But he torments himself because he says, my partners are without their partner. I didn't give them 90 days warning. The hospital is a wreck. Too many pressures. It's an unhealthy place. I opted out. I left them hanging. And I'm not making any money. And my wife's home, and you're having to take care of the dog, and all this guilt. So he can't even find a way to what he loves, which is, I think, fixing up that boat. You know, and anyway, boy.
Well, it sounds like living with his hands, and of course, that's a form of it, being a surgeon, but with a whole different direction. But, you know, when you talk about what he wants to do, and if he can get that vision and let that start to be his light, that will probably pull him out and through that trauma of being in third grade and not being selected and, you know, feeling like I need to prove. And of course, that would be a place where forgiveness would apply to clean that dynamic out of his mind.
Well, I've been trying to figure out how to do a wake-up sheet with him. He's very resistant. I'm his mother. I mean, you know, even though we're good friends and talk a lot, and he tells me how he's doing and how he's feeling, for me to just put the idea of talking him through it without even using a piece of paper, sneaking in, saying, well, what do you feel like right now? On a level of 1 to 10, how bad is it? You know, and I can picture doing that with him, going on a long walk or something, and trying to loosen up. There's such encrustedness there with wanting to please other people and prove that he's worthy. I'm unworthy. I'm a piece of, I won't say the word, but he says, I'm worth nothing if I can't do surgery. And yet, and much as he loves much of the surgery and loves helping people, he has saved gazillions of lives. Well, a lot of lives. And invented a new type of surgery for women who get in trouble with both urinary tract, fistula problems. And a couple of other surgeries. He has teams now. And they come together and they fix this lady up in no time and keep her from losing a ton of blood and all this stuff. It's great, but it doesn't really take care of this hole he has in his spirit from this little guy who took it so hard that he was dumb. He was one of the dumb ones.
Coming from both directions, what's going to draw him out is having that vision and giving himself permission to go for it. And to do that, then he's probably going to have to do some forgiveness work around enhancing his need to be seen. Like, it sounds like he has a vision of what is worthy.
Yeah, he does.
And if he doesn't measure up to that, then he's not worthy. And if he could forgive that vision, the other thing that I've found for people who are living with that challenge, and there are a lot of people who are, is to just, you know, really get across the point. And I've had many people you've heard me speak this on the show before to more than one person, but to just get into that connected space with him. And the truth is, there's only one thing required for you to be functional as love and to be totally, completely worthy, and that is the Creator self to put the breath of life in you. Mm-hmm. If people can take a hold of that idea, and that I found that can help to crash all those other things in the mind that say, well, unless I.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's there's only powerful. One thing you need. Mm-hmm. Breath was put in you. That you got approval from God already. All the rest is all just, you know, made up by culture.
Yeah.
And that, I've
absolutely.
Seen that single idea shift many minds. Oh.
I'll have to bring it up again.
Really?
I have said that to him. I have said that to him. I also said, you were a miracle to us. I knew you were in there before I even had a pregnancy. I knew before you to know that you were there and there was something about you that was extremely precious. And we were so happy to have you join us. And but that isn't, he has this whole construct now. But you're right.
Yep.
I mean, I can say that again. He did say today, he said, you know what I did? He called from the boat. He said, I finally said a prayer. And I said, yeah. And he said, I asked God for help. Well, he's a very devout person, but he hasn't been accessing that at all. And I said, that's great. Just be open and don't put any words in God's mouth. Wait for God to really show you. And that comes from the wake-up sheet. Ask to be shown. I use that, Michael. I mean, your stuff is coming through, but I have to tailor it.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, and being that kind of a space is probably one of the greatest gifts you could give him.
Well, and that's where your tools have come from, is I am okay, thanks to the tools.
Yeah. Well, I hold the space that you're intuitively guided to be able to open the space for him to recognize that, and that, you know, his purpose might be to be out working with horses, or, you know, might be literally to go into the woods and, you know, be a meditator, and that might be his purpose. And, you know, has anybody ever given him permission for that? Has anybody ever, you know, offered that to him?
He doesn't offer it to himself.
Yeah. Well, most things, you know, when you remember the idea of regulatory speech from Laws of Living, regulatory speech is the speech that regulates our cellular chemistry, our emotions, our physiology, our perceptions, and our creative process. And most people hear the speech first externally. That's the first step in developing regulatory speech. The second step, and that's one of the reasons why we do this radio show, so people can engage in the speech. The second step is that people start to speak that idea, those words, to themselves. They verbalize that. The third step is it goes to silent speech. When one starts to speak it in their own minds and they experience that to reduce stress, that's what kicks it into that deeper level of the mind that then re-regulates the whole system.
Can you give an example, a concrete little dialogue
that
you might have?
A concrete example might be, you know, gee, here's somebody whose speech is, I have to be King Kong in order to be valuable, in order to be worthwhile.
Right.
Because in grade three, whatever. So an example of regulatory speech would be, and you might say this often, remember, there's only one thing required to be approved of. The Creator put the breath of life in you. That's all you need, dear heart. That's all you need. We knew that. You know, you could put into language, you know, I knew that when I became pregnant with you, I knew that you were worthy. And if you can get him to repeat that, to speak that, like, you know, even just like, come on now, you know, say it, that you know you're worthy. and starting to move the speech toward what we call silent speech that happens in the mind. And then when that silent speech, when he looks at, you know, what do I have to do? What am I going to do today? Oh, you know, if I just rest and take care of myself, or if I go out and I create myself a 6 month vacation in the Yukon, I'm worthy. That will break that whole cycle. But it has to go into speech to get into, you know, in order to impact feelings. Broca's area is the speech area of the brain. It's right beside the emotional center, and as things click in there, it impacts the emotional center. Feelings start to move in a different direction, and the whole energy system shifts.
That's a great idea.
And maybe, I'm not thinking of a book offhand. G might have an idea, or somebody else that's listening might have an idea. Maybe there's a book out there. It seems to me I've run across one, but one isn't coming to mind. That is a story, and maybe at any level a story, about how somebody tried to do something that, you know, didn't fulfill their lives, and all of a sudden they found something simple that was fulfilling and changed their lives with it. It's got to be out there somewhere, but some example for him to be able to perhaps let go of this, I've got to perform miracles in order to be worthy, and recognize that all I need to do is breathe to be worthy.
Yeah.
And we have a comment from Podbeam chat room, and then also a hands up. So from Podbean, a person asks, are you coming from fear, masking it as concern, and that the first thing would be to go inside and clear up any fear you had around it instead of contributing to the issue with fear, and you know, then just allow the Holy Spirit to move.
There's always some fear, but I'm looking at that, and that's where the tools. I've done wake-up sheets about this. Is where, for instance, I'll just give an example. If I hadn't done any wake-up sheets, I probably would have called my son on the boat last night to see how he was. But I always ask myself, who am I doing this for? And for me. And when I realize I want to know, I can let it go and wait for him. So there is a constant letting go of fearing, but I'm physically old now. My time around on the planet, in spite of 49 meeting at Heartland, I just figure that I feel much more friendly about shedding my own body. And I remember what Byron Katie said too, about a young mother whose child took her own life, teenager. And Byron Katie said that was a great act of self-care and love that she did for herself because she was in such pain. Now, that doesn't cover the whole picture, and it's certainly not a recommendation for taking one's life. But it's a wide, wide way of looking at it, which helps take care of fear of a mother hanging around worrying about her. So that is a good question, and I'm aware of that. I'm mostly just functioning. I say to my son, I'm keeping vigil for you. I'm keeping watch while you get yourself together, and I'm here, pretty much. And he thanks me, and I hope that's what he feels, and that he is. I don't think he's changing anything in order to help me feel better. I just don't think. But that is a good question, and I will be careful about that.
Have you presented to him the idea that reality is a construct of the mind, reflecting content, and that actuality might be something different as a way to perhaps inspire him to be willing?
Well, he often says, I know these are just my thoughts. How do I stop my thoughts? My thoughts are stupid.
So if he asks the question, tell him.
Yeah.
So tell him, here, we're going to sit down. I'm going to fill in the form. Here here's how you change. You ask the question, I've got an answer. Here's how you do it. And I know it works because that's how I've changed my thoughts. So maybe just sit with him and you know, you ask that question, now I'm going to give you the answer, and you're going to listen, and you're going to do it. Might open a space for him.
Yeah, that's good.
And we'll also extend love in his and your direction, that your guidance is there, and his willingness to let whatever this is. And it seems like something that has inflicted many of the men in the family. Like, he's not alone in this.
No kidding.
And so there's a genetic component. Yeah, there's a genetic component to this that I certainly hold the space for the family to break through and be done with it for everybody's sake.
Yeah. Right. That is so true.
And that might be another direction to go in a conversation with them of, have you ever considered that this dark cloud might be something that's generational, that's genetic, that maybe just needs to be broken through? And there is a technology for doing it. I've got it right here.
Yeah. Well, we have talked about that because, you know, it is generational, but that's a good thing to bring up. I found a quote that I wrote that I read to him, which he loved. The quote is, "The courage it takes to leave behind what's not for you anymore is the same courage that will help you find your way to what is." But of course, that's just a statement, and now you're talking about how to do it, how to get there, the tools.
Yeah, without the technology, without the tools, it's pretty futile.
Yeah.
And there might need to be some conversation to overcome resistance to looking, because, you know, and I know from experience working with people that one of the reasons why people don't, especially if they've done a worksheet or two, oftentimes don't want to touch it, is because I know what I'm going to have to look at. I know what I'm going to have to feel. I know what I'm going to have to deal with. And to let them know that it's safe to do that and to, you know, whatever the core of that is. You know, I can imagine that. I think we pretty well established there's a genetic component, but at grade 3 level, how excruciating with that generational pattern in there, how excruciating it must have been to not be part of the in crowd.
Mm-hmm. It was terrible.
That's pretty heavy duty stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a little boy in our church choir. I drive him home after our night rehearsals. He jumps out of the car and he says, "Well, I got to do my talented and gifted homework." I thought, oh my God, the damn thing is still going on. They're still doing that to the kids.
Yeah.
Just amazing that they would do that to the kids.
Rather than recognizing that each one is a genius.
And
their genius doesn't have to be. It's a little story that I wrote once about, imagine they started a school and, you know, long story short, what if the squirrel had been judged because he failed swimming?
I know.
He failed tree climbing. You know, it's like, well, of course the fish is going to fail tree climbing. Fish don't climb trees, and of course the squirrel's going to fail in swimming because squirrels don't. And it's with us humans, until we start recognizing each individuals, the culture wants to just, rather than honor each person where they are, they want a producer. They want a good commercial servant. Ah, you got to be smart. You got to learn this way. You got to pick your two.
Yeah.
That's an unfortunate situation.
It is. Oh my God.
And if you look at the genetic component, that might be something where, I don't know if you've tried this, but you might do a worksheet or two for him as though you were him.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Actually, take that grade 3 incident and maybe do that worksheet as though you were him, and that might help loosen up the genetic component of it.
Boy, oh boy, I will do that, Michael. That's a great idea.
Yeah. And we'll be holding the space.
Thanks. Well, Jeannie said there's another person on the line. Definitely go for it. I'll be listening.
All right, young lady. We appreciate you. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Thanks very much.
The next.
All right, Miss Jeannie, you can call her for us.
We do. It's Rex 517. You're on the air.
Hello there. Wonderful conversation.
Well, hey, good sir. How do you be?
I'm doing well. I'm being perfectly content with the moment. So thank you for asking. I had some things to share about the conversation you're having with the previous caller. And boy, it was a number of things that were triggered and resonated, actually, more accurately. And one of them was when, was it Jean? Was her name? I think.
Susan.
Anyway. Susan, excuse me. I transposed that somewhere else. Susan. So many similarities. The one that really struck me is that back when Michael and Jeannie and Krista Joy and Michael J, I think, I'm not sure if Krista Joy was there, but yeah, she was, came on vacation with us when we first met 37, 38 years ago. I remember sitting, I can visualize it right now, I remember sitting on the couch at the cottage we were staying at, and I was struggling with my purpose. And Michael said, well, hey, what do you like? You took me through the purpose exercises written out on the thing. And everything that was in that purpose exercise has come to fruition. And it took a while, but, you know, my desire to teach, my desire to, do healing work, my desire to, I could just list them, and I'm living that. And I wanted to mention that as a support for the process, because it's powerful and it works really well. And then the second thing came to mind is that another person did in the podcast, or podcast person, said that it would be important to at least check to see if you have any fear, and you acknowledged, Susan, that you did. As a father, and my wife also, we've talked about this a lot and did a lot of work on this, when my son was diagnosed with bipolar and schizophrenic and a whole number of things and had a horrific time, 4 years was an incredible drain on our family and wonderfully challenging from a healing perspective, but horribly challenging from a family perspective and a human being, you know, that whole process of our son. And the thing that was most rampant was how many times my wife and I had to cancel our goal and do the inner work on wanting to help him. And it's innate, I think. I believe in my heart that it's innate to extend support. But when I wanted to help because I was afraid if I didn't succeed in my help, then he would die or he would fail or something bad would happen. Best intentions, but not good base for the goal that I had set. And so without exaggeration, hundreds of times we addressed that goal, sometimes as many times as 10 or 15 times in a day. You know, and the reason it's so important, as Michael articulated, and you understand, you seem to understand, Susan, is that the minute I engage a goal that's based in any other source than my beingness, pure love, then the law states that I must have a negative or destructive result. And so it's a really challenge to do it with our own children. I found it to be the hardest. So I would encourage you to stay really cognizant of that. And there's lots of different methods to communicate. I know that we would, I know he's a grown man, But one of the things that we would do is we would actually walk into Journey's room when he was sleeping. He was an adult. And very politely, we would talk really softly to him. And we would share with him what we thought might be beneficial. But again, always clearing that fear before we went in and did that, you know, and integrating whatever was there. And that was helpful. Writing letters and reading them out loud and burning them can be helpful. I mean, those are, you know, just some people say that that can connect on a deep level to them, non-physically. You get bypass their, you know, resistance. But I found the biggest, most important pieces that I could do were, and still work with this in any of the work that I do with anyone, if I have any resemblance of wanting them to be better, that's based in something other than my being, I'm not able to, no matter how well-intentioned I desire to be. So that, I did want to share about that. And then, unless you have something to say, Michael or Jeannie or Susan or anyone, I'll pause.
No, that's good. Good input.
Awesome. I'm here in Tennessee, in Bristol, Tennessee. I'm actually sitting in my rental car, because it's really comfortable, outside in Michael and Jeannie's yard. And I'm so pleased. I
can't get them out of the house.
It's not true. but, yeah, I chose to come out here because of, sometimes there's echoes and all sorts of things that can happen when we're in the same house. So I came out here, and it's comfortable as well. But I'm here doing an intensive. Now, I've done, I don't know how many intensives, a lot of intensives over our life. I know when my children were young, I think our first intensive when Journey was maybe 7 or 8 and Brea was 9 or 10 or 11, in that area. Might even have been younger.
Oh, no, it was way before that, way before that. I went into Brea's school when she was about 6. And you had done that 30-day intensive. We did it at the Health Institute prior to that.
True story. You're correct. The first one, the intensive that I was thinking of was when Missy came with just the children. So that's where I didn't come to that one. But many intensives. But the point is, been very immersed in the work, and I... Michael invited me to come and do an intensive. I said, well, what's it about? He said, well, it's an intensive. And I said, okay.
A 3-day one-on-one intensive.
You did say that. Thank you. And I said, okay, a 3-day one-on-one intensive, like with a group? He said, you were patient. He said, no, one-on-one. And I said, oh. And I paused and I said, well, I'll put it in the hopper and I'll be with it and see what comes up. And it wasn't long after, it was like, yes, I got my flight scheduled. I called Michael and let him know yes. And he said, he gave me some dates. I got my flight scheduled, got everything all set up, and flew down on the 4th, last Thursday. And we started on Friday. And I realized that we're always, if we desire to reach the next level, whatever that might be to you or as an individual, to me that is for me to fully embody love as love, to be the representation of source love, fully embodied. That's my primary goal. And to live that is to always continually be addressing whatever it is I might be still holding on to or any issue. So I came here with that intention. And wow! I didn't think at this point in my world, in my relationship with Michael and Jeannie, that I could be surprised. But I am very surprised at the level and the depth through which we've been able to reach with these 2 days together. And I wholeheartedly recommend it, but it's not for the faint of heart. It's for those that are serious about moving to the next level. And I just wanted to share it I won't get into anything specific because it's very personal, but powerful, brilliant, and exciting to move forward now, going back out in the world. I'm heading back up to Michigan again. But I wanted to share that, you know, and I also publicly would like to share how much I appreciate you, Michael, and I appreciate you, Jeannie. And I appreciate myself for being willing to share.
Appreciate with you.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. A lot of gratitude.
It sure doesn't taste like tomato juice.
Thanks for giving me an opportunity to share.
All right. Appreciate you, Rex. Good work. All right, Miss Jeannie, we're down to about 15, well, I guess about 12 minutes. So do we have anybody else in the phone queue with a hand up or anybody in the chat room with a thought for us?
Well, I had somebody on Podbeam and they said they had something to share and that they were in queue, but I do not see them. So if you dial the number 563-999-3581 and press 1, it puts a hand up. Otherwise, I do not see anybody else with a hand up right at the moment.
So if you're that Podbean listener and you can dial into the show directly with your phone, 563-999-3581, push 1, and we'll have a conversation.
Her hand is up. I think it's Jamuna.
Awesome. Let's say hello. Aloha.
Aloha. Can you hear me?
Hey there, young lady. You're loud and clear. How are you?
Awesome. Awesome. What a great discussion today. Not only did I get to look at my own stuff, it's all my own stuff, which is great. I'm not a mother or anything, so I can't relate in that way. Definitely in past lives, I probably was, but not in this lifetime. There's a couple things I would like to share. One thing that's upon my heart is to recognize that the ones that we might be concerned about are also the Christ, they're the Son of God. And it's equally important to embody that love, that aloha, as it is to see that aloha in another as that love as well. And the next thing I would like to share, which I was prompted by Spirit, I saw it and I'm going to share it. It's going to sound very familiar. Imagine we have a rose and a butterfly. And we give them each an ego. They meet and fall in love and have a wonderful time together. Then one day the butterfly flies away because the rose thinks there's nothing more important than the love of the butterfly. It uproots itself and gives chase. What is going to happen to that rose? It dies. Why does it die? Because it made something else more important than staying connected to its source. Anytime we make something else more important than staying connected to our source, our being, love, aloha, then we have disconnected and initiate our own death. That's what I was guided to share.
What a great story. It makes the point so well, doesn't it? It's just... and the power of that. Of knowing that, of staying in that connected space. I don't know if you've ever heard me share a corollary to that that I often share in the Y Workshop, but there's a video on YouTube that if you look it up, it's about a lion that two young men in London, England, actually, Harrods department store had a lion for sale. Have you heard that? What that story's about?
Yeah, Christian the Lion.
Yeah, Christian the Lion. That's such a powerful adjunct to that, to recognize the you know, what the presence of love does, even to impacting a wild lioness. You know, it's like so powerful what kind of changes we can make when we go for that connected space.
Yeah.
So thank you for bringing that story up and sharing it with us. It's sweet.
All right, well, that's
great. Great being with you and hearing it.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for saying it.
Yeah. Aloha.
All right. All right, aloha. Mahalo.
And I've put the link for both the Rose and Butterfly and Christian the Lion in the notes for today. And
you are so on it, honey.
I'll just add to the talking about the purpose statement. If he's not willing to actually sit down at first and go through the exercise, and I'll put a link to that in the website as well. There's an exercise that we did during an intuitive development intensive, and it actually led me to changing my purpose statement. And it was just have the person sit down and close their eyes, and you're going to write their answers. One word answers are sufficient, and then you can give them the list afterwards. And first you just say, who are you? And they'll usually start out, you know, oh, I'm Jeannie, you know, oh, I'm a wife, oh, I'm a mother, I'm a daughter, you know, things like that. And then they'll eventually, you just keep asking, who are you? And they'll answer, well, who are you? Well, who are you? And just, you know, maybe change the inflection of your, of where you emphasize the words. And, you know, you can go 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes or whatever. In the intensive, we actually went 15 minutes on that question. And, you know, they'll finally get down to, you know, like I'm a teacher or I'm, you know, a student or I'm love or whatever. And then you start a second question. Well, why are you here? I don't know. Well, why are you here? To help others. Well, why are you here? To support. Why are you here? You know, and do, and go through that. And they may come up with, you know, again, to teach or to support people or to love or to just be or whatever. And then they can take those answers and look at the purpose statement and, you know, is that included in my purpose statement? Am I looking at all of those things of who am I and why am I here? And then direct their purpose statement and see if they're following it. And once they get that in alignment, then they can look at all of their goals and their behaviors and their, you know, dreams or whatever, and ask themselves, does this support my purpose statement? And, you know, I love the example that Michael gives about the guy that he was a banker or a loan officer at a bank and just loaning people money, and that was his job. Well, he quit, and I think he followed somebody around for a while, a guru or something, and got in touch with who he really was. He eventually went back working for the bank, doing the same so-called job, except he was doing it with a purpose to help people who otherwise might not be helped. And so he was doing the same behavior, but with a purpose in mind. Actually, there's a gentleman that I worked with several times over the last month, and he's a physical therapist, and he was talking about how the other physical therapists in the office really don't like what they're doing, and he loves it. And we went through the purpose statement, and his purpose is to help people, whether it's physically, mentally, emotionally, or whatever. And so his so-called job also fulfills his purpose. And it makes a big difference in whether you're satisfied in what you're doing or not. So, you know, Susan, your son's purpose might be to be a doctor, but if he's looking at it that he has to do it as a job to prove himself versus it's part of his purpose to help heal people, you know, then it'll change his perspective on what he's doing and he'll be more satisfied with it. I just wanted to throw that in.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That is a perfect piece to add to the puzzle. And actually, that story is a story that was told by Ram Dass. He had a guy who was a Wall Street banker, you know, major player in the banking industry. And he came to one of Ram Dass's workshops, and he just dropped out. He quit the bank, and he just dropped out, and he became a follower. ruler of Ram Dass. And it was apparently a matter of several years later, he was in Manhattan, and he was, you know, he's a Ram Dass follower, hippie, long hair, you know, all of that. And he was walking down the street, and the guy who had been his manager from the bank, you know, they ran into each other, and the guy said, "Hey, you know, you were one of the best loan officers we ever had. Would you consider coming back to the bank?" And, you know, he took the job, he did it, but he wasn't there to loan people money anymore. He was there to share the presence of love with people under the guise of being a banker. So, yeah, it can make all the difference in the world. So breathe in with you. Let's all just take a few deep breaths together. And recognize that while the world mind, this cultural mind, wants to sort us out by our commercial value, the truth is our value is the same, each and every one of us are literally the offspring of a creator called love. And made in the image and likeness of that love, that's who and what we are. And when we recognize that that's who we are, recognize, remember who we are, reconnect, then it becomes easier to recognize that's the true nature of every person that we interact with. And rather than value being tied to utility, to recognize that value is tied to the fact that we are, each and every one of us, offspring of the presence of love, and that our real and deepest skill, or should I say superpower, is to function in and as that presence of love. And to be, just to allow yourself to breathe fully and be still in that state. Allowing the mind to go quiet. Allow the mind with each breath to soften and get quieter and quieter. And it's in that quiet space that still small voice is heard. Not in the presence of a fearful or a raging or a raving mind, but rather quieting the mind and just standing in a space of being. Will hold your being in that space and invite you to allow yourself for the next hour to 2 hours to stay connected in that space. We're going into right now, actually about 2.5 or 3 minutes ago, an eclipse started here. And it might be a good place to take the next hour or two to tap into the energy. I know that in the past for me, when eclipses have occurred, the energy has always been just such a shift. I don't know what it is about it, but it's been a real change in energy. And so it's considered by many of the ancients that it's a very auspicious time to really focus on silence, quiet space within, and experiencing yourself as the presence of love. And to prepare yourself on a new level to bring that experience of yourself into your own life and into the world, and to touch the people around you with that presence of love. comes through most powerfully when we give ourselves time to breathe and just experience that silence. Holding the space for you to have the best year yet of your eternity.